This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to a special Friday edition of the Orange Bloods podcast, brought to you by the guys over at Texas Card House, 183 Anderson Mill, the state of Texas's premier poker club. If you haven't been there, you need to check it out. I need to get my ass down there. Fellas, save me a seat, because a game of poker going into the weekend actually sounds really, really good. Although I don't want to get my ass kicked, and the games over at Texas Card House are not layup drills. You're not shooting from the layup line, but it is fantastic in every way. I'm still in awe that they have pulled off what they've pulled off, but it is of all of my favorite new businesses in the city of Austin and the surrounding areas. I don't think anything tops what the guys over at Texas Card House have going, and thank goodness they weren't around in 2005. I'd be destitute right now, back in my biggest of biggest poker crazes when it dominated my life. Look, usually it's been a weird week. I haven't done a podcast this week. We did the Ticket City podcast, but it's just been a bit of a busy one for me. So interesting to do something at the end of the week, going into the weekend. And there is a little bit of breaking news on the Texas football front, both in recruiting. And then there's some team stuff to talk about. On the recruiting front, Mookie Cooper decommits from Texas today. In a bit of a weird situation. Sukumel literally talked to the guy on Tuesday, and the kid was like, I'm solid, I'm committed. I was just looking at Illinois because it's the home state school, and yeah, I'm just taking a trip. Just a trip. So Sukumel puts it in the war room, like he said it was just a trip, said he's locked in. And really, no sooner did we post the war room last night there started to get word that he'd taken Texas off of his Twitter bio, and that that there was this feeling that his decommitment was imminent. And sure enough, Sukumel breaks the story this morning officially. Like it was on, you know, it was flashing lights that it was obvious. But Sukumel, I think, the first to call him or text him in this case and actually get a quote. He doesn't say that he's not. This one's just kind of weird for me, because Mookie Cooper has been to Texas numerous times. The Longhorns have been on him like stink on you know what for such a long time. And when he committed, he seems so adamant about it. And it had been in the works, and he made a special trip so that he could do it. And here we are a few weeks later, and Mookie Cooper decommits. I don't know that this is the type of thing that you freak out about. You know, Mookie Cooper is a phenomenal football player, and he's exactly the kind of recruit that you want to be able to bring in on a yearly basis in droves, right? Because if you've listened to my philosophical takes on recruiting, I care less about the names and less about the specifics of the players per se, as much as I care about how many you sign. Because recruiting for me is now just a math equation. It's about trying to work the odds in the best favor that you can so that you're developing as many high-end players as you can. For Texas's sake, you know, the thing that is kind of the elephant in the room, and it was this case even with the commitment of Mookie Cooper, is that he plays a position where the Longhorns have recruited as well as any school in the country in the last couple of years. I've detailed this both on the podcast here on the Yak and in my articles and thoughts over at orangebloods.com. But the group of receivers that Texas has on campus right now, and this isn't hyperbole, I mean, this is backed by the fact that I went back and researched the last 25 years of recruiting to kind of find out. Originally, the thought was, I just wanted to find out who the top 10 rated receivers in the history of the program were. You know, was it, because I was wondering where Brew McCoy officially sat. And, you know, I know Montrell Flowers was ranked really high once upon a time, and BJ Johnson and Roy Williams. BJ ranked ahead of Roy, which sounds so crazy all these years later. Even I did that. And then in putting that list of together, I realized, holy crap, like five of the top 10 rated receivers in the history of the program are on campus right now, five. And that doesn't even include Colin Johnson, who wasn't a high enough rated recruit to even qualify. You know, when you look at what this, and you look at what was really added in this most recent class with Brew McCoy coming in late, Jake Smith being a foundation piece of this commitment class, and you add it in there with the Brennan Eagles, and this is just Texas, like, just doesn't need the need for wide receiver is at the bottom of the totem pole right now in terms of positional needs in recruiting. Now, again, you need as many good, badass players as you can get, and that is the role that Mookie Cooper, I think, positioned himself at. You're talking about a guy that, based on his current ranking, probably safely projects as like a 35 to 40% chance of being an NFL player, just based on the data after two decades of where he's ranked. Guys in that position typically make it as an NFL drafted player at about that level. So, you know, on one hand, it's not a big deal because they're really, really stacked at receiver. And there are, I mean, just the state of Texas in general, and not even the state of Texas, the entire country, like wide receivers, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, but I sometimes think that wide receivers do these days because it is a 7-on-7 game. You know, once upon a time in the state of Texas, wide receivers and quarterbacks were impossible to find. 20 years ago, this state was a disaster, certainly at the quarterback position. The state of Texas went more than a decade where its best developed NFL quarterback was Billy Joe Tolliver from Texas Tech. And he was just a journeyman guy in the NFL, but there were literally no others. Then you'd have to go back to like Tommy Kramer. The state of Texas went through a period of play for about 20 plus years where the best two NFL quarterbacks that the state had ever produced were Tommy Kramer and Billy Joe Tolliver, at least as it relates to developing into NFL type talents. And clearly the state of Texas is just in a different position these days. I think 25% of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL are from the state of Texas. It seems like every year there's a quarterback either going number one and he's from the state of Texas, right? We're talking Stafford and Andrew Luck. And then last year you're looking at Baker Mayfield, and now you're looking at Kyler Murray. You had RG3. It is a state that it now just pops them out. And it does the same thing with wide receivers. It used to be that in the state of Texas, the wide receiver position had a higher bust rate than just about any position. I can think of tons of wide receivers from the state of Texas over the years that I personally overrated along with other people, and they just didn't pan out, and a lot of them went to Texas. Been a lot of dudes at the receiver position over the years that were very highly rated, went to Texas and other schools for that matter, and then didn't pan out. And now it feels like that happens less and less and less, that the state of Texas, because of what it has become in terms of style of football, you know, you can find some badass wide receivers. That's just kind of the way that it works out right now. And, you know, I think if I didn't put a GIF response to the commitment to, or the decommitment from Mookie Cooper from Texas to now being open and seemingly headed to Illinois, if I were, it'd probably be the Elmo shoulder shrug. That's my initial reaction. Just kind of a shoulder shrug. Kids do the damnedest things. They say the damnedest things. Their emotions can change at the drop of a hat. And this one just doesn't kill Texas. It is what it is. So you take Mookie Cooper because from a talent standpoint, he's elite. But Texas is in a pretty good position at his position. I think they'll be able to fill that void with maybe the guy that fills the Mookie Cooper void in this class isn't quite as highly rated as Mookie Cooper, because Mookie Cooper isn't too far away from five-star status. And he's the best player in his state. But I just don't think if you're a Texas football coach, if you are a Texas football fan, this is one of those things where, okay, you move on. Batter up, next guy up. And I think that the options are available for Texas to fill that void. And I don't think the Texas coaches will ever look back. I don't think they'll give up on Mookie Cooper. But, you know, Jason Sukumel reported this or said this on Orange Bloods right as it happened. It's very rare when a kid decommits from a school and then goes back to that school. It occasionally happens. But it rarely happens. So, you know, my instinct is that thing's done. It might not be. This could be one of those exceptions to the rule, but my gut instinct tells me that the Mookie, Mookie, Mookie episode of podcasting that I did on the Yak a couple of weeks ago, that was all for naught. There'd be no reason to save that one for the archives. Because I don't know that there will be a Mookie Mookie. It's so disappointing. I've been wanting there to be a Mookie. Mookie's one of my favorite names. Like, who doesn't love Mookie Cooper or Mookie Blaylock? Like, why can't the University of Texas have a Mookie? And they had a Mookie, and now Mookie is gone. And now I go back to yearning for the days when the University of Texas has someone on their team named Mookie. They can follow in the fine tradition of all of the terrific Mookies that have played sports at various outposts over the years. It's disappointing for me on that level. Moving away from recruiting for a little bit, Texas football team starts spring practice on Monday. And one of the things that we talked about on the Ticket City podcast yesterday, which if you haven't listened to on the Yak, you need to. It's free pod. It is the thing that we do every single week with the entire Orange Blood staff, except when Orange Blood staff members are doing things like covering the combine in Indianapolis, as Alex was last week. This is a football team with all due respect to what just happened with Mookie Cooper. Texas is a bit on a heater. I talk about how much of a hot streak Texas is on the heels literally hours after. I'd have to look it up. Was Mookie Cooper their highest rated guy in this class so far? Maybe I'm drawing a blank at the moment, but you know, with all due respect towards the decommitment that just happened, Texas enters spring football on Monday, and everything's pretty awesome in the world of Texas football. They're coming off this monster win over Georgia in the bowl game. They put the ribbon and bow on a 2019 recruiting class that has a bunch of early enrollees, but B also is just generally stacked. One of the back-to-back top five classes. I don't focus on number one. I don't focus on number two. If you're in the top five in recruiting, you've got an elite class. And typically, it sounds a little crazy, but there's usually a big drop-off between 5 and 10, and then you go from 10 to 15 and 20, and there's even bigger drop-offs. So Texas, back-to-back top five classes, they are feeling sky-high after the way that the football team ended its season. 2020 recruiting is going well, except for the loss of Mookie in the last couple of hours. They are hiring analysts that are amazingly overqualified for the positions that they're going to hold, which would seem to indicate that Texas is going to have some real quality behind the scenes in terms of both self-scouting and scouting opponents and just the work that analysts do. There's continuity on the staff. Everybody's happy. This is just a good place. The football program's in a good place. So I'm fascinated to see Monday and how spring football kind of unfolds, because it's been exactly a decade since Texas has returned from one season to the next with the quarterback position being absolutely solidified by a guy that is a plus player to, you know, you could look back at David Ash in 2012, but, you know, even then they're always, like, David Ash never had people convinced. And then the concussions happened, and then for a brief moment when it looked like the quarterback position was completely taken care of, it wasn't. They spent six more seasons trying to figure that thing out. You know, being able to return with Sam on Monday changes the entire vibe of practices as far as I'm concerned, because whenever there's a quarterback battle at a program like Texas, there's a certain anxiety level that the entire program feels from day to day, because every mistake feels magnified. Every positive play feels magnified. Think about the practice reports, right? Like, Shane Bouchel threw a 75-yard touchdown pass to Colin Johnson today. It was the best play of practice. And so then there's, Shane won today. Shane won. 75-yard touchdown pass. Biggest play of the... And this kind of day-to-day, up and down, oh, God, nobody played well. Nobody's played well in 2 days. Sam's been good back-to-back. Like, it's just a lot. The players feel it. The coaches, they can all say they don't feel it. But when it's the only thing anybody's talking about, it's impossible to run away from it. And that Shane's gone. Sam's back. This is Sam's football team. That's how it works. When he stood up on the podium after the Sugar Bowl and was like, "We're back." Like, when he did that as the face. Like, Tom Herman wouldn't have wanted him to do that, but Tom Herman can't do anything but the Elmo shoulder shrug because that's the dude. So Texas goes into spring practices on Monday, and that's taken care of. And this feels like a team closer to reloading than rebuilding. And I think Anwar Richardson and I might disagree on that. There is a lot to be replaced. But when you look at what's been recruited over the course of the last couple of years, what we talk about, what's behind guys, what is the players replacing a lot of these players that have departed, a lot of them bring zero experience for the most part to the table. You know, if Jalen Green ends up being a starting cornerback for this team, there will be this feeling like, oh, no. But I think there's a couple of things, and I say that, oh, no, from, like, he has no experience. What does that mean? I think, you know, when we look at the players that have departed, there are some good players in that mix. Gary Johnson's a perfect example. Like, I don't know that Texas definitely has a body, a definite player that's going to fill that void. But I know that a lot of people are really, everybody is stoked about Joseph Asai. So not apple for apple, not necessarily playing the exact same position, both linebackers. Like, they're playmakers headed to the lineup. Same thing in the secondary. You mentioned Jalen Green. You think about a guy like Anthony Cook. You think about a guy like B.J. Foster establishing himself. DeMarvian Overshown. Like, those guys, same thing at wide receiver. Yes, little Jordan Humphrey is gone. But I mentioned Brennan Eagle's name earlier. We know that Brew McCoy is on campus. We know that Texas has got guys at receiver that are just itching to get on the field. That was the case a year ago. You know, a year ago, the best thing that Texas had going from a depth standpoint was that they had three pretty badass receivers in Colin Johnson, in little Jordan Humphrey, and in Devin Duvernay. And they were stacked. They're still stacked. They're stacked behind those three. But there wasn't a lot of available playing time because those three guys kind of took a lock on the playing time. So I think the battle at wide receiver this year is going to be fascinating because those dudes can all play. They can all play. You look at the offense. Look at tight end. Yes, Andrew Beck is gone. And he was the dominating person at that position. And I thought Cade Brewer was a guy that I expected to see more of a year ago. And I would say it registered as a little bit of a disappointment that he was never, like, I never thought that Andrew Beck was that damn good that Cade Brewer couldn't get on the field if he was really, really good. But now that Beck is gone, you know, you've got a situation where Anwar Richardson reporting in the war room last night that of all the players that are kind of standing out in offseason workouts, Cade Brewer's right there with them. So, yeah, you lose a guy in Beck that turned out to be a really critical role player, but I think there's this sense that what will be replacing him will be a bit of an upgrade. So it may very well be that the rub for Texas going into the fall, especially early in the season with that early game against LSU, the lineup may be more talented and like the personnel may be enhanced. It then comes down. This is maybe the story of this Texas football team is simply a matter of how long will it take the new talent that's assuming critical roles in the program, how long will it take for those guys to get comfortable and settled? And that is a big part of what this spring is about. It's about guys like grabbing chances by the throat and saying, I'm not letting this chance go. And then once they've done that, it's about, okay, there's a difference between practice and games, and how long will it take this team to be really good on the field? I think back to the 2006 season where it's mostly remembered as a lost season because at the end of the year, Colt McCoy got hurt against Kansas State. They lose the game against A&M. They don't win the Big 12 championship, and it ends up just being a bowl game against Iowa that nobody really gave a shit about, right? But the beginning of that season had Texas in the top five. The beginning of that season had Texas playing Ohio State in a 1-versus-2 matchup that, you know, Ohio State won that game emphatically, but you go back and you look, that was a 28-14 game. Like, it wasn't, you know, Texas was in a 1-2 matchup in that early part of the year, and I would contend they played that game 6 weeks later, it might have been different. That the Texas after the Ohio State game in 2006 was pretty damn good, man. Pretty damn good. That team wins a Big 12 championship and plays in a BCS bowl had it not been for the injuries to Colt at the end of the season. But, you know, they had a run from the third game of the season to about the 10th game of the year where they didn't lose. Colt McCoy looked like a Heisman finalist as a redshirt freshman, and then it got away from him. I look at this season and wonder what that LSU game is going to be in September. It's so soon. The difference, though, is that while that 2016 was trying to reload at a lot of key positions from guys that departed after the national championship game, including the quarterback position, like that Texas-Ohio State game was all about the fact that Ohio State had Troy Smith and Texas had a Colt McCoy that wasn't ready for that game yet. And that won't be the case with Texas this year. Like, and again, that's why I can't stress enough that going into this spring, Sam Ehlinger's presence and what it means and what people think of him and the way the team perceives him, he can go have an awful day. Sam Ehlinger on Monday in shorts and t-shirts can throw 19 interceptions on day one. And everybody's going to go, well, that was extreme. But the general consensus would be, but we know what Sam can do. So that's an anomaly. That's just a bad day. There's nothing big picture about it that anybody needs to worry about. If the quarterback position wasn't settled, Sam throws 19 interceptions, the same 19 interceptions. And the reaction would be, he hasn't developed. Oh, we needed Sam to take this step, but he hasn't taken it. Look how bad a day of practice. Like, no other position on the field deals with that type of anxiety on a day-to-day basis, except at quarterback. And that this is, you know, the quarterback question for this camp is not going to be, how's Sam look? Sam look good? Sam look like he's improved? Man, nobody's thinking about it like that. Nobody's, the only quarterback question about this team in the spring, how's Casey Thompson look as the clear-cut number two? Rashawn Johnson doing okay? Like, we'll talk about the backup guys, how they're doing in their specific roles. There will be a freak out. There's no anxiety. In a weird way, the departure of Cameron Rising probably added to this ease of anxiety because there might be a little bit of anxiety knowing that those two guys were on the precipice of departing, but then they stayed to give it one last chance before they take the first train out of town to go to a program where they can get on the field earlier. But Cameron Rising leaving means really and truly there's not a spring debate at the position. Casey Thompson can have all of the good days in the world, and Sam Ehlinger could probably have all of the bad days in the world, but it's Sam Ehlinger's team. It's his job. This season is about him. And it's the thing that I can't help. It's such a different thing for this school to be walking into. It's such a healthy thing. It's incredibly healthy for the first time in more than half a decade to not go into the spring with that type of anxiety over the position. So spring football starts on Monday, and the single most important thing that has to be determined about your football team is already determined. Everybody, just chill out. It's an anxiety-free spring as far as I'm concerned, because we know that there's a bunch of young guys on this team that are looking to make step up. So there's just no reason to live day to day. And there's no reason to obsess over who looked good today. This will be about a body of work. And I think the Texas coaching staff, I think they've got to be an incredibly confident group right now. And I said this in the Ticket City podcast yesterday. Attaboy, Tom Herman. Coming out of year one, I think there were a lot of questions that could be asked about Tom himself. I think about his assistant coaches. And to Tom's credit, he didn't make any changes. But in year two, there were lots of changes. And the staff is knocking it out of the park on a lot of different fronts. Tom Herman, as the CEO of this program, has knocked it out of the park on a number of different fronts. You kind of got to be a real miserable asshole to nitpick the program right now. Seriously, if you're listening to the podcast, Catch, come on. Come on, Catch. Mookie Cooper just decommitted. Mookie Cooper just committed. You're telling me to be happy? No, man. If you're tripping over Mookie Cooper, if you're like, I still don't like that Tim Beck is the offensive coordinator. Like, if you're still saying those things and they're impacting your mood, you're a miserable asshole. Because there's a lot of good. And look, man, I've been a miserable asshole. This program has made me a miserable asshole doing my job for a long time. But I'd raise my hand and admit in real time, yeah, man, I'm miserable. Jerk, asshole, whatever you want to call me. Like, that's me. But there's so many good things happening now. It's like springtime being in the air, and you're like, it still gets cold at night. It's like, yeah, but the sun's out and the trees are blooming and, you know, it's no jackets. But it still was chilly. It was chilly. I couldn't leave my window open last night. It got a little cold. Well, I didn't cold the other 6 days of the week. I'm still miserable. Like, that's Texas football right now. If you're looking and finding the thing to be miserable about, you're missing all of the good things that are occurring. Man, you need a hug. Maybe something else. I don't know if in 2019 I can still say you need to get laid, but men and women both need to get laid. So if you are a man or a woman and you are listening to this podcast and you find yourself saying, I just feel miserable about Texas football, you need to get laid. Get a hug. A hug and then get laid. And then go get a good meal. Like, go do something that's going to put you in a good place. Because I'm telling you, you should all be in good places. A few other things. Texas baseball team last night. I don't know why there are 19 Pac-12 channels on my Spectrum cable TV package, and none of them had the game on. I have Pac-12 National, and I guess to be fair, it was is it the Pac-12's women's basketball tournament like already happening? I didn't think that happened yet. Like, I have to believe those weren't last year's Pac-12 tournament games on television, and that was what was on. So I guess conference basketball on the women's side trumps the one-on-one battle between two top 10 baseball teams. But how about the Texas baseball team? Go up to Stanford game 1, 0-0 all the way through 8. They truly manufactured four runs in the ninth inning. It was, you know, wild pitch here, some walks there, a key hit there. I was watching it on Facebook at my computer on the counter of the dresser in my bedroom, and I was laying in bed watching Facebook on a screen about 15 feet away, and I was doing it without the sound because I think I was watching Pride and Prejudice last night. So on one TV, I had Keira Knightley on. Don't you judge me. Don't you dare judge me. Don't judge me that Pride and Prejudice, the 2003 version, maybe. I don't know what year that was made. Early 2000s. And I don't even know who in the hell it is, Mr. I don't know who that dude is. I don't know who that dude is that plays the role of Mr. Darcy. But I've seen that movie a lot, and it's been on TV a lot, and every time it's on TV, it stops, or I stop, and I watch it. It is, for me, a must-see Keira Knightley movie. I still think Keira Knightley, for me, ranks number one. If my wife said, we have a magic genie, you have a magic genie, and for one night, you can have an affair with any woman in the world. Who's your number one? I'm giving you a free ticket. You can use one of your wishes from our genie to do this. And I'd let my wife do the same thing. And I think she would still pick Christian Bale, but I'm not 100% certain. But, you know, I wouldn't begrudge her that. Oh, it's Christian Bale. Shrug. Hope he doesn't kill you like an American Psycho. But other than that, it's Batman. Can't begrudge a woman wanting to hook up with Batman or Superman. Like superheroes in general, I think, get a pass. How could a woman or a man not completely be knocked head over heels, regardless of circumstances, over an actual superhero? So, but if I had the magic genie, I would, and I was thinking about this last night while I'm watching Pride and Prejudice, because it is maybe the third time in a week that I've stopped my television and watched the last half of this movie. I think Keira Knightley is still my number one. And I think she's got had like a decade long grip on mine. Ever since I saw Love Actually in the movie theater for the first time, Keira Knightley has been my number one. So much so that, yes, I may have watched Pride and Prejudice for the third time in a week last night while watching the Texas baseball team win again, beat Stanford 4-0. And kudos to the Texas pitching staff. Nine innings of shutout baseball against the number six team in the country at their place. I have no idea. Texas could lose the next three games. They could all be hard fought, but Stanford could strike back. I think we're seeing some. This won't go down as the most talented Texas baseball team of all time, or even in recent memory, maybe. But It's got a lot of young talent. It's freshmen and sophomores are playing really well. And the thing that you can't shake right now early on about this team is that confidence-wise, they play with swagger. There was never a moment in that game as I watched it on Facebook. So, you know, I don't know that I can make too many broad opinions about this team based on just that. But in watching that game, I never felt like Texas was down. I never felt like Texas was fearful, you know, because the game starts to get late and it's 0-0 and Texas was wasting opportunities and not able to manufacture runs. And they just went out on defense in the pitching and they just handled their business. And it never felt like Texas was in trouble, except for one moment, right? They had, I want to say, second and third, maybe in the seventh inning. I don't remember what inning it was. You have to forgive me. I was watching Pride and Prejudice at the time. And I don't have Dustin's extra bases in front of me. This is just stream of conscious podcasting here. You know, Stanford had a couple of guys in scoring position, I think once all game that I noticed. I think I missed the first four innings of the game. And Texas just worked their way out of it. Against a Stanford team that everybody knows and thinks is legit, Texas went into their place last night. And they just played a calm game. So patient. So patient. Never flinched. And then they got guys on in the ninth and they executed. And then you look at it, and you're like, they beat them 4-0. 9 innings of shutout ball. And you tip your cap. And I'm the Texas baseball team has my attention in early March. Is the thank God. Can't watch any more Texas basketball for the most part. Oh, man. Do I have to watch it tomorrow? Do I have to watch that game? Do I? Probably so. Last regular season game of the year. They need to win it. It's a must win. I feel the same way about the Texas women's basketball team. Like, why am I watching? I'm not going to do that in this podcast. I can't do that battle that I've done all week long with Texas women's basketball fans who think I'm a miserable asshole because it's year 7 under Karen Aston. And like Texas women, there's a part of the Texas women's basketball fan base that's looking at what she's done. And they're like, man, we've gone to a bunch of we've gone to like 4 sweet 16s in a row. Before that, we almost rarely never did that. So it's not great, but it's not terrible, and we'll take terrible, we'll take consistently just good. And I tend to look at like making the Sweet 16, and I go, well, first of all, don't use the horrible results from the previous 15 years as like exhibit A for why pretty good is serviceable right now. And look at me, I'm going on a women's basketball tangent when I said that I wouldn't do it, but let me just wrap it up. You look at the teams that are advancing to the Sweet 16 and one year the Elite Eight. It's not even the Sweet 16 thing. It's that they made the Elite Eight 3 seasons ago and they haven't been able to build off that. And that Baylor, if anything, has expanded the gulf between the two schools since Texas made the Elite Eight. And I know Texas has had injuries this year. But, I mean, that's why you recruit every single year to put 4 recruiting classes together. So, in theory, that if one or two women get hurt, you know, you have to have enough depth in what you do. It's part of the criticism of Shaka. You know, they haven't been able to withstand losing a player for any extended time. Although, weirdly, they've done better with this Curran Roach. I wonder, and we'll talk about this next week, what Shaka Smart does with Curran Roach when he comes back in the Big 12 tournament. Because I wouldn't start him. Just me. I wouldn't start him. Jace Fabris has taken that job. He's playing really well. I think this team is playing as good of team basketball in the last, with all due respect to the game in Lubbock over the weekend or over earlier in the week, they're just not as good as Texas Tech. Texas Tech's damn good. I don't know. I won't know until the brackets come out, but Texas Tech plays such good defense that there's a good chance that I'll have. I could see myself picking Tech in a Final Four, depending on what side of the bracket and who they have. I could definitely see me picking Texas Tech to make the Elite Eight. And I definitely will have, I don't even care. Pre-bracket, I'll have Texas Tech in the Sweet 16. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe frame that moment. I don't know. There are many of you listening to the podcast that I will think to yourselves that you've never heard me say those words before. Touche. Final thought in the podcast before we move on, now that I've gotten the Pride and Prejudice piece of the equation out of the way, Game of Thrones. That thing, I think, is 37 days away from the final season of Game of Thrones, and I'm absolutely obsessed. The Ringer has been doing a daily Game of Thrones article, kind of, we're 5+ weeks away. We're 5+ weeks away from that show picking back up, and I am daily reading articles about its return. I don't think I did that with Breaking Bad. I don't think I've ever done that with any show that I've ever watched. Now, look, like when we jumped into like True Detective from this past season, it's really, really good. I'll during the show, I'll be obsessed. I'll read everything. I want to read all the crazy theories. I want to read all of the stuff on the internet that just, you know, it's a waste of my time. All that stuff I read on True Detective during the course of the 6 weeks that it was on, and I ended up, none of that stuff ended up being right, and I wasted my time, but I enjoyed it. I'm doing that right now with Game of Thrones, and I bring all this up because I had lunch yesterday with Dustin McComas. We did kind of our like monthly Pluckers wing visit. I went 10 hot, by the way, flappers. That's kind of my standard wing meal. McComas will do 5 and 5, and he always kind of mixes it up in ways that, like, oh, let me have cinnamon apple and sesame seed. Like, I don't know what he did yesterday. It was kind of weird. But I went tried and true, hot, a little extra crispy, not too wet. But we were talking about Game of Thrones because he just finished season one. And spoiler alert, like, just stop listening if you intend to watch season one of Game of Thrones and you never have. Because in about 5 seconds, I'm going to reveal some plot lines. But there have been 5 seasons since Game of Thrones season one took place. And McComas just finished season one. And I couldn't believe how much I wanted to talk about it. Oh, let's talk about Ned getting his head chopped off. And that's, you know, at the end of season one, Danny gets naked and goes into the fire. And then they had the dragons. And like, you have no idea what is headed your way. And Dustin, I think, was fishing for info yesterday, and I wouldn't give it to him. He was like, I think Arya might kill someone eventually. And he gave me this. He's like, something about the look on her face makes me think she might kill someone later in the show. And I was like, no way am I telling you anything about Arya beyond season one. I see you fishing. I know it. I know you've probably heard Red Wedding. I'm not telling you about that. I am not going to be that guy that ruins Game of Thrones for you. But as I told Dustin, let me know as you go where you're at, because I am itching like a crackhead over some Game of Thrones. So I guess this is just my way of announcing to the world via the podcast here on the Yak today that just you guys just need to be prepared that for the next 75 days, from what I can remember from the Ringer articles, we're now 37 days away from the season premiere. And then it's like 38 days later or something like that. I have to look it up. But we're 70 plus days away from Game of Thrones being over. We're 37 days away from it kicking back up again after we've waited 2 years. And then it'll be over before we can blink. But for the next 75, 80 days, you guys might be wanting to talk only about Texas football or only about March Madness or only about the baseball. I'm just letting you know right now. I am going to be heavily themed in Game of Thrones. And I don't know that I have a preference for the way that it ends. There's a part of me that wants to see Cersei live and end up happy. Well, why can't she go to rehab, give up the wine, give up the incest? And like, why can't she hook up with Podrick and they live happily ever after? Why can't that happen? Why can't Arya kill a few more people, but then she meets a nice boy? And they kill the dead people. Bran walks again. Why can't these things happen? Like, I don't exactly know what I'm rooting to happen. I don't know I'm team Danny, team John. I just assume they're all going to die. I do want to see, I want to see the brothers. I want to see the mountain and his brother get down. I think I gave up on happy endings on this show when the mountain took on the viper. And then the viper had his head squished, just broke my heart. And I haven't allowed myself to have my heart broken ever since. That was one of the most hardcore moments in the history of television as far as I'm concerned. And after that happened, I was like, oh, they're just going to do this to me all the time. First they cut Ned's head off, and now that happened. The greatest example of not to showboat in the middle of a match ever. Anytime I see a player peacock in a game right now, I think, you know, you can get your head cracked in. Like, that could happen, squashed. Don't showboat. Didn't work out well for the Viper. He thought he had that thing won. You can pull out defeat from the jaws of victory. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'm looking at the clock. I probably need to wrap things up. I'm totally like stream of conscious right now. And yeah, thanks for giving me a little bit of time. I hope this carried you over the weekend. It was good to be back. I'll talk to you on Monday. Later.